We're going to start with day 12, the meeting of the Pisces College, and why shouldn't we have a Pisces in here? And the reading, John 1:15 says, "We have beheld his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father." We have arrived at Epiphany. Each of 11 brotherhoods have met in order. The 6th of January, the last of the 12 days of Christmas, is reserved for the order of Melchizedek. The ancient sign of this order was the sign of the fish. So it is fitting that this also is the College of Pisces. The purpose of the order of Melchizedek is to perceive the reality of Christ, to behold his glory. Every soul can now perceive the risen Christ in the etheric of the world, and this experience will give the gifts of freedom and individuality we have already described. When a soul who is part of the order of Melchizedek sees Christ in the spiritual worlds, then in a flash they understand their spiritual origin, their present purpose, and their ever-increasing identification with the divine pattern of Christ. "Not I, but Christ in me," St. Paul says. The power of this order does not create wisdom, authority, or mastery. It creates transformation, first within self, and then within the world. To behold in the sense of the original Greek does not mean to stand back objectively and view his glory as one might view a picture in a gallery. Instead, it is a sense of embracing and participating in the experience. The word glory also carries another significance, for it is the same word in the Greek for thinking, doxa. The word of the order on this day is to gather together the work of the previous 11 colleges and to add this to the experience that comes through knowing the Christ. On this day, those born under the sign of Pisces should be especially sensitive to the work of this college, but we can all focus on the new work of Christ in the year to come. At this time, our prayer can be that we too have the experience and the power of Christ and beholding him in his glory, the glory as of the only Son from the Father. Shall we pray? Lord, grant me or us to see you as you really are. Open our eyes to your glory. Open our hearts to your love, that we may no longer see through a glass darkly, but behold you face to face. In your name, the name of Christ, the only Son from the Father, so shall it be.
So shall it be.
And if everybody's muted, please, I'll get JR to start. Thank you.
Thank you, Melody. And I thank each and every one who's attending.
Can you speak up, please?
If we are attending, it is because we have been called. And not only have you been called to be part of this very special experience? But the calling comes upon this physical body that I inhabit at present. And because so many of us are here tonight, that is very encouraging, because it means that as time goes on in our priesthood, we become more and more attuned to the voices which call at this time of the year. And although part of me sits here in this chair, struggling a bit with the Aramanic technology, as Reverend Mario would say, another part of me is being tugged, so that I no longer am identified with the physical body, but as it were, I hover in space, even in space above the roof of this beautiful old house. But this, I'm not entering into the physical world. What I'm entering into is a profound darkness. And yet the darkness is not frightening. It has no fear within it. It's the darkness of the sleeping heart, or the heart that is on the verge of awakening and waits only to hear the voice of the beloved. And my ears now are making clearer the sound that I was hearing before. And they are the sounds of the voices of the angels. And as I realize this, then the angels themselves begin to come into focus. And the angels, as I perceive them at this point in time, are not like the well-behaved, staid, respectable angels that festoon our Christmas cards and our Christmas decorations. These angels are not sitting there or standing there and singing piously. They're shooting like shooting stars. Whoosh! There goes one. And another one just shot over my head. And as they go, they're crying out. And they're crying out because they are filled with this incredible joy. It's the joy that we feel sometimes when all the world is right and when everything has clicked for us in that moment. We feel joy course through our beings, but the angels live in that joy. They are buoyed by that joy. They fly with that joy. And as they fly, they call out. And I suppose the very best expression that I could give to their calling, their voices, is the word glory, gloria, doxa, as Melody mentioned. But it's the glory of being part of the uncreated light, of being part of the creation itself. It reminds us that we too are part of this creation. And although we forget, we become separate when we descend into physical incarnation. An aspect of it, a part of us, always resonates with the voices of joy. And we too have the urge, each and every one of us, to be part of the creation by being creators, co-creators in our turn. So blessed tonight are all those who create with their hands, who create beauty within the lives of others, who create beauty with their voices, who create beauty as art, as visual representations. And the more that we join together as creators, the closer we come to the angels. Now, I'm feeling very cold. I'm in somewhere that's snowing. It's snow on the ground. I'm not feeling cold because I don't have the right clothes on, for I'm wearing an old, well, it's not old, but a black priest habit, I suppose you would call it. And I have a sort of a black hat on my head. And I look down and I can see that I'm in the garments of a Russian Orthodox priest. And I'm brought back to an incarnation when indeed I was a Russian Orthodox priest in the 17th century. And I'm standing in the middle of a snowstorm, so no wonder I'm feeling cold. But I'm aware that I'm being joined by other souls from all sorts of different places, all sorts of different cultures. And there's a coming together. This is a coming together in spirit of the 12 brotherhoods, the 60 brotherhoods, if you prefer, for each the 12 has five aspects. And we could no doubt multiply this, but I don't care about that at present, because we are entering, we're streaming together, perhaps 1,000 of us. And we are streaming towards the entrance of a great cave. And the cave emits a golden light. As we enter in, we can hear voices like a choir singing. And I wish I could have the time to stand and listen and absorb and have the possibility of recreating that music. But I'm told at the same time that what I hear will never be forgotten and will become available to me in consciousness in time to come. We walk down what is like a long tunnel, and as we walk down the tunnel, it's a very wide tunnel, wide enough for 10 or 20 of us to walk together. We pass by certain stations, and the first station, like a station of the cross, is a representation of the old year. So each of these stations represents what the energies of the old year 2024 were about. And the first person, or the first station, I see a woman, actually, dressed like in Greek robes of ancient Greece. And she bears a sort of a vase, a big urn. And on the urn is written, renew. And I'm reminded that the direction for the Melchizedek Brotherhood last year was that we would make everything new. And I walk past the second stage shows a young man, and he also holds a vase. And this vase is separated into a white half and a black half. And this means that people had a choice in 2024. They either allowed the energies of renewal to work within them, in which case they would recreate their awareness of who they are, of what their purpose is, of what their tasks could be, or they turned that opportunity down, which is the black half of the vase, and they walked further into a dark consciousness. So if you look back at the last year, and you can say that in some aspect of your life, you experienced that you were made new, then you are blessed because you have carried the seed of the year of making all things new within you and brought it to fruition. And for those who didn't do that, for those who weren't able to grasp the energies, which were very difficult energies, many of us know that. For many of us, it was a very difficult year. But if you were able to grasp that, then you will face the new year, 2024, 2025, with optimism and with power and with strength, because the strength that you need to face the challenges in this year is going to be immense. We file. There are more stations, but I won't talk about them at present. But we file into the what I've always called the amphitheater. It's like a Greek or Roman amphitheater for dramas, and for speaking, for orators. And we sit in a sort of a semicircle around the stage, which is at the bottom of the amphitheater. And the whole amphitheater, with perhaps 1,000 of us sitting there, some of us are in the flesh, some of us, perhaps most of us at this stage, are in spirit, representing souls that need to come into incarnation to assist the world through what's going to happen in the next 20 years. But we are all Melchizedeks. And everything becomes dark. And I know that the stage has become occupied by a presence. And this is a mighty spirit. But as we wait within the darkness, something very tiny, a very tiny speck of light, it begins to emerge, and our attention becomes focused on the speck of light, and as it grows larger, it grows larger and larger. I perceive it as a star, a four-pointed star the star becomes so large that it's entered into the amphitheater, and it sits just behind the left-hand shoulder of the speaker and now illuminates. And we see that the speaker, the master of ceremonies, so to speak, is a man of middle age, but with white hair, thick, long, white hair. And he speaks to us, and he says this: "This is the year of the star. And I'm wondering what that can possibly mean. The year of the star." And he continues. "The star is first of all hope. So in this year, hope is given to the world. There is a light that is given in the darkness." And the speaker indicates that there is a great darkness within the world at present. Many, many powerful figures within the world were given an opportunity to renew, to leave behind the old. But some of these figures, national leaders, leaders of political parties perhaps business people, scientists, people in control, people who are influencers, people who love power, almost all of them turned their backs on the opportunity that was given. And so, because they chose the black half of that year, the world has entered into a period of greater darkness than we have seen for many years. But with great darkness comes the greater need for light. And each of us, as Melchizedek brothers and sisters, part of the Melchizedek fraternity, each of us will be given this little light within ourselves. And our work in this year is to shed light, even to a tiny degree, for people. Even just to plant a seed of hope. So firstly, the year of the star is a year of hope. Darkness is not forever. Darkness cannot be forever. Darkness represents the forces within the astral, and the astral is dark. The astral, which represents the energies which create our desires, our wants, our yearnings, our urges, these build a dark consciousness. So the task of all spiritual people, not just the order of Melchizedek, is to look beyond the astral. And the speaker turns and asks us to look at the star again. And now I see that the star has a form, it has a shape. Each arm of the star is not flat, it's beveled, sharply beveled. And bound upon the star, bound with the spine pressing into these sharp edges, is a man. He's a young man. As I see him, he's got light ash hair. He doesn't look Asian, he doesn't look English or Caucasian. He just looks human. His eyes are closed. He's suffering, he's in pain. But upon his head is a golden crown. And this is Christ crucified again in the etheric. But this time Christ is not given the crown of thorns, because that was an indication that the crown center had been sealed off when he entered into the physical body, and the crown of thorns represented the pain of opening again to spirit. This time, though, Christ wears the golden crown, which indicates that he is also Christ the conqueror. And the figure on the cross represents, of course, who we truly are in our deepest, innermost natures. And the four arms of the cross indicate the negative energies that work within the astral, the bottom arm of the cross is dominated by a being that you may not know, but his name in the occult tradition is Sorath. And he is the demon or the demonic energy of fire. And he is the energy that whispers in the ears of our politicians and leaders and people in power to be destructive, to find ways of hurting, of maiming, of killing, of taking apart the lives of other people. It's a fire energy. And then the right hand is an earth energy. And that's the energy that has been called by some the Asuras. And their energies say there is no such thing as spirit. Give it away. It's a dream. You're imagining things. When you die, there's nothing. You don't do anything. You just return to the elements which you were made. Give up trying to be spiritual. Give up trying to do anything worthwhile. Just live in the moment for what you can get. I sometimes think that it's an advantage getting old, an advantage that most of us now seem to share. Because as we grow older, that voice which says there is nothing there fades away, because when you've spent years as a priest, you know precisely what is there. And then the upper arm of the cross, that's Araman. And that represents the energy that enters into the intellect and says, my mind is all there is. The internet is all there is. I don't need to communicate with the spirit because I've got influences out there who will tell me what to think and how to think. I've got media, newspapers, people who write articles. I can let them think for me. I don't need to think anymore. Richard Dawkins has thought it all through and told me that God is a delusion. So this theremin. And finally, the final arm upon which is crucified is the workings of Lucifer. And Lucifer works within the emotions and stirs up our emotions when we immediately jump to an opinion or jump to defense or have to do something because our emotions take us over. That's Lucifer. Now, Christ has given us four ways of working with these, and these are the ways given in the last year's reading. And at the bottom of the cross is the word energeia. And energeia means the activity of God. So we combat the negative fire being, Soreth, by participating in the energy, the acts of God. And that's one reason why it's so important that we are creative within our lives. Otherwise, we become absorbed into the energies which bring us to a point where the only thing we want to do is get through one day after another, sit in front of a television, watch perhaps game shows, and just let our life dissolve away. Energeia. Take action. Energize yourself. Act with God. Create. Be a co-creator. And then the technique, the tool that's been given to us to combat Azurus is called patience, that is to say kindness, patience. Treat ourselves with patience, with kindness, and may our embrace, our interaction, our relationships with all other people, may they be first in a spirit of kindness. We don't need to have expectations of others, not even for ourselves. We need to allow others and ourselves to be in peace and to come to fruition in their own time. The word or the tool given, the power given to combat Ahriman is lux or light. And the intellect is full of light. When we know stuff, we feel enlightened. When we can recite the periodic table or we can count all the primes from 1 to 1,000, we feel gratification. We like to engage in politics because we know politics is something where everyone knows that they're right. We'll never find a politician who says they're wrong. So we love to get involved in political debate and religious. Oh, religion, that's a really, Ahriman loves religion, by the way. Ahriman's responsible for a lot of the developments in religion over the past 2,000 years because religion gives us the opportunity of being self-righteous and looking down on other souls and saying, I have the truth. You don't. And the remedy to that, the counteraction to that within our world is light. But it's light as a power. And this is the light, this is a very difficult thing to explain. There is a light deep within every human being, each of us. Christ is the light of the world, and we contain something of Christ within ourselves. Did you ever ask yourself how the body of Christ was transformed on the cross? How it became a resurrection body? It was transformed by light. In the 11th, 12th, 13th century, a movement arose within the Eastern Church, the movement of uncreated light, the experience of the light of the Transfiguration on Mount Tabor in the New Testament. And certain techniques were given then so that the disciple could look within and amplify this inner light from the spark of the star into the radiance of the sun to such an extent that the light would actually shine from that person physically and illuminate a darkened room. And the technique is really very simple. You focus your attention on the spot between your eyebrows, and you imagine it growing from a spark into a radiating, radiant beam. And you do this by imagining yourself in that spot and saying to yourself, I am the light of the world. I am Christ. I am the I am. And then you repeat those three lines. And if we were to do that in the same way that Tibetan monks have been known to do that for many years, we would in fact transform our bodies into the body of light, the radiant body. And of course, I hate to say it, but if you're like me and you're in the 70 plus age group, it's probably too late because you need to practice for about 50 years, apparently. But what the focus on light does is it creates an inner illumination, and one becomes able to see self, to see who we are, to illuminate the darkness, to be honest with self. And that's a very, very difficult thing to be able to do, to confront self. Finally, Lucifer. The word or the power to combat Lucifer is amor, or love. And here, this is not love in a sentimental sense, like the angels on the Christmas card. This is love as a power that can hurt, that shatters, that transforms. Our love tends to be sentimental. Real love is a deed. Real love is an action. Whether we take an action within our own lives or an action within the world, our actions should come from love. And then we've completed the circle, you see. We've completed the circle that started off with energeia, because energeia is the acts of God, and God always acts in love. We have encountered patience, kindness, and God is so patient with us, brothers and sisters. I cannot tell you how patient God is. And you might say, well, it's all right for God because he's got all the time on his side. But in a sense, there is no time. So God experiences who we are and who we've always been. But he also experiences who we might become. So we always look forward to the future, to the greater possibility, the greater flowering of who we are. And then light, God is light, Christ is light. And finally love, because God is love. It doesn't say that Christ is love, it says God is love. And even Christ, in the end, unites with the greater than himself. Christ unites with the Father and emanates from this union the Holy Spirit, which works within the four powers. We are, or I am, leaving theatre, the amphitheatre, if you liked. We're all sort of filing out. The word, the message of the year has been given, and we are adjourning. I think that's a good word. We are adjourning to our respective meeting rooms. And the meeting room, the boardroom, as I think of it, is, as always, it's in an oak-paneled hallway. And there's a beautiful wooden door with an ornamental round handle. I open the door and I go in. And we are sitting, the Order of Melchizedek, the representatives of whom there are always 12, are sitting around the table, the oval table, like a boardroom. And the person, the individual sitting at the head of the table, talks to us, and he wants to help us understand something of what has been given. And he says the speaker who gave out, transmitted the year of the star to you, his name is Melchior. Thinking, I know that name. And he says, because he's very clairvoyant, of course you know that name. He's one of the three wise men. I think he said, three wise men, you mean the ones that visit Jesus at Christmas? And he says, yes, the Magi. They were representatives of the order of Melchizedek in those days, but more, they represent immense spiritual forces. And these beings, overshadowed by these spiritual forces, journeyed from Arabia into Palestine because they had seen the star. You see, the Magi, the wise men from the east, the star, they are connected. So if this is the year of the star, it's also the year of the Magi, the Magi. Sorry, the Magi. So we need to understand the spiritual significance of the Magi. What spiritual powers do they represent? There are three spiritual powers. The Magi are three powers that travel always together. And in the spiritual worlds, these are in fact the spiritual beings of the sun, of Mercury or Hermes, and of Venus or Aphrodite. And the name of the sun being is not the Christ, but the name of this power from the sun is was known to the Greeks as Apollos. So these, in the zodiac, these three bodies travel together always. They're never more than one sign away from each other, so that the journey of the Magi represents the journey of the three spheres of influence through the sign of the zodiac. And so in this year, we need to understand the significance that the gifts that are given to us as Melchizedek priest, and in fact to all of humanity who are willing to embrace them, are the gifts of Melchior, which is the gift who represents the sun and brings the gift of gold, which is the gift of Christ, the gift of individuality. So that even though this is a difficult year, greater individuality is given to us. Second, the gift of Hermes. And Hermes is the god of wisdom, the god of lots of other things as well, especially of trickery. But the gift of wisdom and the connection with the ancient teachings. And this year, more of the real occult hidden understandings will be poured forth into consciousness. And there's always a lot of dross where there's something precious. But the reality of the understanding of the ancient teachings, which will be restored to us, and they are understandings of who we are as spiritual beings, greater insight into, for example, our subtle bodies, the way in which we interact with energies and influences within the world, and the techniques and the methods by which we can retain and conserve our vitality and our energy and express ourselves more freely. And Hermes and Apollos have a very interesting relationship, because Hermes stole from Apollos, stole his cattle, as a matter of fact, when he was a young god. And to appease Apollo, he created the first musical instrument, which was a seven-stringed lyre. So that the two, that's as in harp, not as in person. So that the two gods and the two powers of the Magi represent the need or the power to create. And we all have the power to pluck the seven strings, which are the seven spiritual centers, of course, to make them work and to be creative with them. And the name by which Hermes is known as the Magus is as Casper. And that leaves us with Balthazar, who is Venus. And you might say, well, surely they were all men, but this person, Balthazar, was overshadowed by the power of Ishtar, Venus, Aphrodite. And the gift of Aphrodite is frankincense, beauty. So again, everywhere in this year where we can spread and create beauty, we are lifting the shadows. Now, the speaker says, I have news for you, boys and girls. There was a fourth wise man. He set out with the others, but he got lost on the way. And his name was Altazar. And he lagged behind. He didn't make the trip with them. he got caught and he got enslaved by the Romans when he tried to enter Palestine, because he had a terrible accident. He'd lost all his goods. He'd lost the present that he was going to bring to the Christ child. And so since he didn't have any money and he looked pretty shifty, the Romans just said, "Oh, well, we'll make you a slave and send you off to the mines." And so this person, Althazar, missed seeing the Christ child because he was working as a slave in the mines. And this Magus also was overshadowed by a planetary spiritual power, and he was overshadowed by Mars. And Mars has always represented the energy of destruction, also the power to act and to activate. But in the ancient world, Mars, that spiritual power, was disabled, I think I have to say. Wasn't able to express the ability to forge anew and to dare and to express courage and bravery, to act, to initiate, to create the new. The Mars in the ancient world was not able to do that. So the story goes on. When he reached about the age of 50, 20, 30 years after Christ was born, Althazar was infected with leprosy. So he was no use in the mines anymore, so they just chucked him out. And he was wandering through Samaria, I think it was, with a few other lepers, when they encountered Christ. And they begged for healing, so Christ healed them all. And all the lepers went away and said, "This is fantastic, this guy just healed us." But one of them, Althazar, realizing that he was healed, went back to give thanks to Christ. And in healing, see, the thing is that these little stories, they have profound meaning. Christ not only healed a human being, he healed the spiritual power that was overshadowing him. So since that time, Mars has become able to be freed of the old chains that were disabling him. And although Mars was the god of war, the sphere of Mars is now inhabited by the spirit of the Buddha. And so that Mars, when you get to know real Mars people, you will find that though they may rant and rave, be blustery, and that at their core there is an enormous gentleness and compassion. And so since all of us experience the power of Mars in our lives, we've been given the opportunity to express compassion and gentleness within the world. I think we'll take questions now, if there are any questions.
Well, you've already mentioned Azurus, so I don't think we need to go there again, because we are looking for the light, not the destruction. So, Ross, I hope you heard that well, because it was very clear to me. I do have a question from Becky. I have to read it. And she said, why are so many people now being diagnosed with neurological disorders such as Friedreich's ataxia, Parkinson's, multiple sclerosis, cerebral palsy, motor neuron disease, to name just what some of these, and what is the purpose of these disorders, Love Beck?
That's a really great question. Thank you, Becky. In the simplest possible terms, the purpose of these disorders, these neurological disorders, is to shake you up, give you a shock. How can I put it? This is, I don't want to generalize, but a neurological disorder in spiritual terms means that there is a disconnect between the astral and the etheric. Okay? Now, it's the etheric that directs, if you like, enlivens, vitalizes the physical body, so we know that. But it's the interface between the bodies that affects physical health. Now, the etheric gets its instructions from the astral. The astral sends, the astral thinks. So it thinks, move over there. So it connects that to the, it sends that message to the etheric. The etheric organizes the body and walks you over there. Okay, that's a very simple way of putting it. Now, this works fine as long as the astral and the etheric connect smoothly. The lovely modern word, interface. The interface between the astral and the etheric has to connect properly. But what happens with the neurological conditions is that a spiritual force enters in, and I understand that it comes from the physical body because it's of the genetics, but that's actually back to front. But a spiritual force enters in and disconnects the astral from the etheric. And of course, the negative side of that is that the astral can no longer communicate properly with the physical body. It's got to go through the etheric. So therefore, the astral says, move over there. And the etheric gets the message slightly jumbled, and it says to the body, wobble over there. Or the astral says, sit down in that chair. And the etheric again gets the message garbled and sends it to the physical body and says, fall over. Okay, I'm simplifying. But there are so many varieties of these conditions. Parkinson's, for example, is an example of the disconnect. Addison's disease. Friedrich's ataxia. I think those were some of the ones on your list. Now, but why on earth would a soul incarnate to encounter this? Because this happens, of course, when the physical body is predisposed in its genetic cellular makeup. Well, the soul experiences this because it needs to experience it. And what do you learn from having a disconnect between the astral and the etheric? Well, one of the things that happens is that the memories from the etheric no longer feed so strongly into the astral in a controlling manner. Control goes both ways. The astral feeds into the etheric, okay? And it feeds thoughts and orders. And for example, Reverend Mario used to say, if you have a desire to smoke, that's in the astral. But if you feed that into the etheric, it's much more long lasting. Whereas you can break an astral habit in 7 days, you might take 7 years to break something that's created an energy in the etheric. So the etheric works the other way. The etheric contains within itself all your memories, not just the memory of this life, but the memory of previous lives. Now, let's say that you had a very difficult incarnation where you had some very difficult karma to resolve eventually. You would come into incarnation with almost being controlled by such a memory. Let me see if I can give you an example. Perhaps someone who's been shot in a previous life, they would have that memory deep within them. And when they met that person who shot them again, they would have a gut reaction. And it might not happen overnight. But in fact, the strange thing is that you might have an overwhelming, or you might have an attraction to that person. But then when the memory starts feeding through into the astral, it creates an aversion and a need to get away. So let's say that this is your situation and you can't resolve your karma with this person, then one of these neurological conditions comes in, separates the astral from the etheric, and all of a sudden you're not controlled by that etheric energy. And all of a sudden, to your amazement, you feel better about yourself. You might be worse physically, but you might feel better. You might feel clearer. You might understand things better. You might find that you can be more loving. And certainly that happens with a lot of people who have these conditions. Not everyone, obviously. Sometimes people have these conditions get so upset in the astral that they feed back into the etheric and get more angry. It creates a negative feedback loop. But there's a second reason, and that is that within the world at present, there are different spiritual energies working through the national folk spirits. I think that's the best way to put it. And some years ago, I think it was 2022, we were given an image, a view of the map of the world. And on each country, there was a volcano. And coiled around it was a massive dragon. And in some countries, the volcano and the dragon were waking up. And when that happens, then all the negative energies of racial karma feed into the folk spirit. So Russia, for example, is an example at the moment, that the serpent, the dragon in the Russian folk spirit, is red. And it's the volcano, so to speak, is spewing black ash into the atmosphere, poisoning the minds of the people. And so the dragon, which is red, indicates that it will go to war, which is what happened. There are dragons in many different places, but most of them, thank God, so far have not become activated. So that in the Sudan, for example, the the dragon and the volcano there are very active in the parts of the Middle East. No need to ask which parts. The dragon and the volcano are active. And the dragon is the act of aggression, but the volcano represents the lies which justify the aggression. Grab that. So that there are two, every country's got it. Australia, by the way, is really fortunate in that it has, because of its native culture, it has an incredible power to deal with the dragon or the serpent, because in many Aboriginal myths, First Peoples myths, the serpent is a creative impulse, which is what it should be. And as if we could unite more closely in Australia with the Indigenous understandings, then we would create, we would lose some of that aggression, we would become more truthful, and we would become a greater people all around. We would become really the new, in fact, this is getting away from the point, but in the next 100 years, this will happen to a much greater degree. And even although it doesn't seem to be happening at present, gradually, very gradually, and it might take another 100 years, the consciousness of the West, the Western immigrants of Australia, will unite with the consciousness of the Indigenous people and create a unity out of which something new and beautiful will flower. And we will see that in the gradual changes of physiques. Australians will become physically different from other countries. And one hopes that they will evolve into the beautiful people, as occultists have said. But the jury is out on that. So, Becky, to come back to your question, there is an energy that's put into the world at the moment to try and stimulate these negative forces. And Christ has countered, if you like, by changing the consciousness of souls with these neurological conditions to create a counterforce where there's aggression. These souls will become more gentle. Where there is hatred, these souls will become more loving. Where there is illusion, these souls will become more real. There's nothing more real than trying to walk when your physical body is not helping you. So that in the end, many of these neurological conditions are given by the higher spiritual worlds in order to counteract the selfishness that permeates our world at the moment. Do we have any more questions?
Well, I thought that was really good because it's explaining how transformative those conditions are. And when I think of all the people I know who have them, they do become much more gentle, much more beautiful, and much more full of light. And I was just wondering what happens to the carriers.
The carriers of the genes.
Yes.
Well, that's a contract made, isn't it?
It is.
Birth. That was decided and agreed with, entered into, signed in the presence of Christ, and executed in this incarnation. And it takes actually, it's interesting because it takes a great deal of love between the soul. Love connection between the soul that carries the gene and the soul that receives the condition. understand that. I think if there's no more questions, that's great.
I have another question. Excuse me, I have another question. Yes, I do. Because we are all Melchizedeks here, we might consider ourselves different streams, Johannine, Pauline, whatever. But because we're all Melchizedeks, and in that sense, free priests, I was wondering what would be the advice from the Brotherhood for us in the next few years and into the future, please?
Just listen. The Brotherhood is bringing what you call the streams together now. There's a coming together. Even after the incarnation of Christ, it took a lot to bring the streams together. There were great arguments, especially between Paul and James. Paul had to cry out in one of his letters, "As God is my witness, I do not lie," because James had accused him of lying. And so that there is a difficulty. The greatest difficulty is between the James persona and the Paul archetype. But even this will come together. And eventually, there will be a realization that all the streams are all parts, members of the same body. And there will be an acceptance that each member of that body has its own function to perform. And in the years to come, the free priesthood, as you know, it will spread slowly for the next 4 or 5 years. But then we will come to a point where either the movement will expand greatly and you'll have thousands of priests eventually, or those who carry the movement at present, those souls may decide they've had enough and return to the spiritual world, in which case the movement will go underground and appear to peter out. But then it will be revived about 2050, 2055, somewhere around there. There are wonderful spiritual beings coming into existence. The new Christ bearer is in incarnation in New Zealand and very young. And when she reaches the age of 30, then the revelations which come to her, the understandings, revitalize what we have of the Order of Melchizedek. And the Order of Melchizedek will only be able to ordain and to create priests until about the year 2100, this century. So this is the century of ordinations and of connecting with Melchizedek's. But in the meantime, you have to keep going as you are. You have to keep uniting, meeting at gatherings, sharing the teachings, sharing the knowledge, celebrating the festivals, communicating. This is the fragile web that holds us together. And whilst the internet is created by Ahriman, Christ is in the communications. Christ can use anything that Ahriman invents. So the future is in the hands of the one who holds the future, I suppose. And that apart from that, the door is closed. Thank you.
Well, it's very wonderful that we have all joined together and understand that we are one. I think that's been a remarkable thing that has happened for us. And I do thank everybody who has come tonight very much. Very, very, very much. I finish.
Thank you, Melody. And I have just one last thing to say, and that is, go forth into the world in peace. And when you hear a whoosh, it's probably an angel. Good night. God bless. All the blessings from the Brotherhood to all of us. So shall it be.
So shall it be.
Wow. Where are you, John Pattenden? John Pattenden, where art thou?
Ready for it.
You can unmute now. We're going to do the bread and wine, and you, John, are blessing the bread.
Okay. Helen?
Yeah.
And everybody repeats after you. Okay.
On the night in which our Lord was betrayed and gave himself up for the life of the world, he took bread in his noble hands. And giving thanks to God, he blessed it. And he gave it to his disciples, saying, "Take and eat you all of it, for this is my body, which is broken
for you."
Oh, yeah.
For you.
And likewise, after supper, taking also the cup and the wine into his noble hands, again giving thanks to you, he blessed it. Yep, that's right, Ivana, just like that. He blessed it and he gave it to his disciples, saying, you can say it with me. Take
and drink you all of it. This is my blood.
And as often as we eat of this bread and drink of the cup, we do show forth the Lord's death until his presence is fully and utterly revealed within us.